I have
current geek.
Oh, hey everybody! Welcome to Current Geek. This is Current Geek, the weekly proceedings of the meetings of the Frog Pants All Stars, geeks of the world, and you to keep you current on all things that matter most. I'm Scott Johnson with Tom Merritt. Hi, Tom.
Hello. I have to check to see if my keyboard works after I just bashed it with the gavel. There.
That's no good.
It didn't sound quite normal. I accidentally hit the keyboard wire.
We've never really talked about this, but it's a risk every time we record that Tom may smash a piece of hardware with this gavel he keeps on him.
Yeah. Laptop, coffee mug.
Yeah.
Current Geek shot glass, anything could happen.
Well, be careful, because today we got a big full show, and we have a slightly full show when it comes to guests. We had one person have to step out because of rad reasons. We'll get to all that in a minute. But ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the show our guest, Jason Inman, host of DC All Access and Geek History Lesson. What's going on, Jason?
Hello, hello. And I just want to point out that we can be so geeky that if you look at the video stream, our audio listeners, of course, can't figure this out. I'm the only one in this recording with a backlight.
Yeah, that's true. Look at you over there. That's
no key light.
Yeah.
But I got a backlight.
I don't know, Tom.
I got a backlight.
You can have a backlight, don't you?
Oh, wait. Tom beat me.
Yeah
hold on. Here, I'll turn it off. You can see.
Oh. See, this is what people don't... We need to... This is good to do once in a while. People,
everybody thinks that's a green screen.
Yeah,
that's what
they think that's fake. They don't think that's real back there, that you just pick some very homely, sort of comfortable back screen thing that I don't know, looks like you're nice and relaxed with your pipe and your dog at your feet.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, that's real stuff back there.
It looks like the mantle of his house.
Yeah, it's the fireplace there. See, I got the lights there. I got the backlight here.
So Ashley was going to be with us too.
Key light.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Look at that. You really are set up, dude. Jeez. I had no idea you had that many lights. I have one light blaring at me from over here.
Yeah, but yours looks great. Your fire looks better than mine anyway.
I don't know why it does. It doesn't have any reason to. I got Han Solo looking at me. Everything's fine. Everything's good.
Yeah, there you go.
Anyway, it's good to have you here, man. And we're sad, though, because your collaborator and wife, Ashley, couldn't be here.
Yes.
Ashley Robinson was going to be here, but she is at like some rad opportunity, some sort of something out there in Hollywood. You can't tell us what it is, can you?
No, I can't say what it is. All I can say is that it was a call that she got this morning that I was like, you have to go. She was like, I really want to do Curtain Geek, but I was like, no, this opportunity, you have to go.
Oh, so, yeah. We would have agreed with that, right, Tom? We're not going to tell
her. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, 100%. She was so nice and apologetic when she sent the note, but when she said why, I'm like, oh, no, that's great. Go.
Yeah, be like, out. Be not on this show is where you should be. It's not here.
So
well, anyway.
Hopefully I can be Ashley enough Robinson for her.
Well, I'm sure of it.
You know, you'll do your best.
Yes. Yeah. And for those who are like, wait, I know her name. Why do I know her name? A lot of you know who she is because you're part of this community and she's certainly part of it. But if you've seen the Red Shirt Diaries, then you've definitely seen Ashley. And that's a really great web series. You should go check it out. Search YouTube for Red Shirt Diaries. All right. What should we do now? I know. Headlines.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
All right, Tom, there's got to be something this week. What's going on?
Yeah, well, there's this little company in Japan, started out making playing cards, and recently they've been expanding into making some electronics, and they announced a new game console last night called the Switch, the Nintendo Switch, which will arrive on March 3rd. Although when I did my pre-order on Best Buy, it gave me a date of March 2nd. So I'm thinking it means March 3rd Japan, which is March 2nd in the Western Hemisphere. Anyway, it's going to cost you $299. Comes in an all-gray version, as well as one that will come with a gray slate dock and screen, but then red and blue controllers. They call them the Joy-Con controllers. Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild is also going to be released on March 3rd. And the console features a 6.2-inch 720p 1280 by 720 multi-touch display that you can pull out of the dock. So it's 720p, and you can play it as a portable game console or put it in the dock, and it'll output 1080p to your television. Games are going to come on game cards, taking you back to the old days, cartridges.
Wow.
Nintendo claims you'll get between 2.5 and 6 hours of battery life. When undocked, it charges over USB-C, can connect up to 8 other Nintendo Switches for LAN play. And Nintendo also announced an online service for the Switch that's going to be free until fall when they'll start making you pay for it. And there's a lot of details yet to come on that. So far, the only detail we have is that you'll get one free NES or SNES game each month. And then that game goes away at the end of the month. You don't get to keep it.
Yeah, the nice thing about those once-a-month classic games is they will, for that month, be, where applicable, they'll be multiplayer enabled. So they're going to take retroactively games that might work in a multiplayer environment. Like, let's say, Balloon Fight, the classic NES Joust ripoff Balloon Fight. And that game, in theory, will let Tom and I play over the internet with each other, cooperatively or competitively, but only for a month. So if you are out there going, man, I cannot wait to build my library of classic Nintendo titles, I've got bad news for you. It doesn't seem like that's what's happening here.
Mm-mm. I mean, you can buy them after the month is over, but that's not part of your subscription.
I think I'd rather have this than not have anything sort of like this. I think this is an okay idea.
I want to know what else I'm going to get for that online service. Like, there has to be, there's a bunch of multiplayer things they showed in the announcement last night, right? And so I guess I'm guessing it gives me access to not only play Balloon Fight with you, but do some of those other
things. Yeah, and I've got, I mean, I have a trillion things I could say about this, but Jason, I have a, I'll throw this question at you.
Sure.
We have a product from a company who's, you know, a known quantity. We know what Nintendo's up to. We know what they're about. And this feels like, in a lot of ways, a return to form for them, back to a place where they're maybe best suited, you know, video game-ass video games on a console that's both portable and home. It takes their two current diverse businesses and sort of puts them in one, assuming they really want to push everybody to this one platform. And it's got all these, you know, venerable, decades-old IPs like Mario and Zelda and whatever. I mean, it's a real recipe for success for Nintendo, in my opinion. The one area they have really sucked at in the last, I don't know, two cycles, which is really the only time they would have needed anything like this, is their online stuff. It's all been bad. Friend codes and the way that you manage the things you've purchased and not being able to move those from one, say, 3DS to another 3DS if it got stolen or broken have been abysmal. Now they're going to give us a service they're going to charge us for, sort of Xbox Live PSN style. What do they have to do to get your monthly payment?
Well, that's an interesting question, because I'm not sold on this console. I think it's a genius idea. I really do think the idea of being able to take this pad from your home out in the world is really cool. I don't know how competitive this thing is going to be in a world of iPads and iPhones, to be honest with you. Like, maybe for me, if this had come out 8 years ago, I'd have been like, yes, done, bought, you have my money. But in a world of iPads, I don't know if I want another sort of iPad-shaped thing. The Nintendo service, man, to get me to buy onto this thing and to really make me excited would be, they'd have to break the one-month rule. That would be it. Or they'd have to let me keep a game until I decide I'm done with it and then return it, kind of like a Redbox or a Netflix type model. Whenever I'm done with that game, I can click a box and then I get my new allotment for the game. I don't know, man, because I own a PlayStation 4 and I don't even have PlayStation Plus. So, you know, I don't know. They do a lot.
Keep the game. If you download the game, it's yours. You don't get to give it back ever.
Yeah.
So
it is a weird model, right, Tom? Like, you're asking us to say, download a thing, whether we're paying for the service or not. And then, oh, sorry, you have to give it up after a certain clock runs out. Is kind of a weird turn for this.
Did you guys, can I ask you, you guys both pre-purchased?
I did. I tried and didn't get it. I was too late. So
What about it? The console to you spoke out to you that you were like, I have to get this.
What spoke to me was, I need to have these things to talk about them on shows like Current Geek and Daily Tech News Show. So it's kind of hard for me to tell if I would buy it anyway. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think I would, though, because I'm fascinated with it. But that $299 price tag really gives me pause. I thankfully can call it a business expense, so it's less pause. If I was just deciding on my own, like, do I want to plunk down $300 for this? I would be very excited, like, yeah, I want to play Zelda. Yeah, I want to try this screen that will let me play my games even when my wife is watching something else, or vice versa. $299 for that?
Yeah.
And suddenly, if I have to choose between consoles, I'm thinking again about, I'll just stick with the PlayStation.
Especially in a world where the most recent, the slim PS4 is now $249.
Yeah.
You know,
well,
with a game.
Nintendo has long settled into a place where they're your second console, right? Like, so if you if you're the kind of gamer that wants to have one and a half experiences, what you have traditionally done since the Super Nintendo days, roughly, you have said, well, I'll get a whatever one of the two leading ones is, and I'm not going to buy the other leading one because it feels very redundant to have, for a lot of people, not everyone. Some of us have all of it, and that's just the way it goes. But for those who are, you know, a little more thoughtful about this, they're like, well, I ought to get a PlayStation, but I don't need an Xbox. It doesn't make sense because it's kind of the same. Or I'll get an Xbox, not a PlayStation. Nintendo's always fit nicely in this, like, second slot where it's a little less expensive. You get these experiences and these games that are no place else. They're very exclusive and in many ways groundbreaking and incredible. Like, Nintendo, their games are, you know, an inspiration to a generation of developers. So there's no reason to knock them for that. So my thinking is, for them to stay in that position, this service for their monthly thing should have been free. I also think it should have been free based on the pressure they're going to have on them from having such a crappy free service before this. Matchmaking, what have you, friend codes were the worst, that now there's this all this new pressure on them to provide something that actually lives up to the cost of it.
I think that legitimately is why they're making it free until fall, is to give people time to go, to give them time to say, like, hey, it's worth it. Look, you don't have to pay for it. Try it. You'll see that it's worth it. I think people are having a hard time seeing why it's worth it yet. So we're just going to have to wait till it launches.
That is true. All that being said, I think the only other really interesting, well, there's a lot to say about this, but the answer is I'm absolutely going to get one. Where else am I going to play Zelda and Mario titles? I mean, it's my Zelda machine.
I will say the idea that Mario title, the open roam world of Mario, that did intrigue me.
Yeah.
New Donk City.
Yeah. New Donk City.
Yeah, no kidding. Also, the sheer breadth and width and depth of the Zelda title has me super stoked, although that, of course, is coming to the Wii U, so existing owners will have that same experience. But
I know that this is not actually, like, the way it works, but it feels like all the people who are complaining, like, why would you ever buy the Wii U, are now saying, I'm just going to buy Zelda for my Wii U. I'm not going to waste money on the new Switch. Did you buy a Wii U suddenly?
I completely agree with you. Like, there's a weird, I have a big disconnect with that. I think that they're now being presented with a different value proposition. They're being told, well, for $300, you can play Zelda on day one. But if you already have a Wii U, you can play the exact same game. Oh, well, if that's the game I really care about right now, maybe that's just, I'll just do that. So I can see why they would shift and shuffle around to that. My big thing is, I think this just says to a lot of people, and the reason these sold out so quickly on the pre-order, and part of that may have been, I don't know, maybe they're artificially, you know, not that much stock to pre-order anyway. I don't know. But I think the reason people are excited is this does look like Nintendo getting back to their roots, what makes them strong. There's no crazy gimmicks, although you could argue those Joy-Cons and the form factor.
The Joy-Cons are their gimmick, yeah.
Yeah, so there's some gimmicks there for sure, and a lot of it is, you know, I got the impression from the presentation that some of this stuff is really wedged in there, like, we still have motion control, and we came up with analog sticks first, and so those are there, and, like, they're trying to make sure we remember the DNA path of this device.
Cartridges are back.
Exactly. But at the end of the day,
everybody wanted those.
And I'm, by the way, all in on cartridges. I have no problem with this, because we're talking about high capacity. I mean, we're talking about SSD or not SSD, but we're talking about memory cards. We're using them for everything else. There's no value in optical media anymore. It's slow. It spins. It's lame. It breaks. Like, I'm all for this. That part is not a problem for me. Plus, you can buy all the stuff digitally, so who cares? So that is not even an issue. But people are seeing this and saying, this is Nintendo getting back to the kind of machine, the kind of hardware, and the kind of game relationship that we loved them for in the first place. Not with a weird giant touchscreen, not with a bunch of styluses or a clamshell with two screens, one on top and bottom, and how are we going to take advantage of that, despite the success of those devices. It's just a good old-fashioned, let me play some damn video games. And I think that's very appealing right now. So
and it could probably work until they announce their own Oculus Rift called the Virtual Boy.
Oh, Lord.
They might It'll be the Virtual Man. Virtual Boy's all grown up.
Yep.
I don't want to play anything called the Virtual Man, just for the record.
All right. Let's move along to movies. J.J. Abrams was giving an interview to People magazine and said he's done enough reboots. The quote is, I'm more excited about working on things that are original ideas that perhaps one day someone else will have to reboot. So Westworld, Star Trek, Star Wars. You know, not all of the Star Wars, obviously not a reboot, but he's definitely craving working in his own original universe.
Well, you could even argue that like Super 8 was an homage to the Spielberg sort of movie making
that
he grew up with. And as much as I love that movie, those influences are there. And I really, really liked the third Mission Impossible film, but that's a sequel to a existing rebooted franchise. So he has been spending a lot of time outside of various TV projects working in film anyway on reboots or homages or complete overhauls. And I am all for this. I want to see what J.J. Abrams does with a fresh slate. I don't always need him to be the guy. I mean, I think he's the guy for the time. Like, could you have asked for somebody better to step up to the plate and bring Star Wars to a new generation? Probably not. I think he absolutely nailed it. I think he did that to some degree with Star Trek. So it's not that I regret any of that, but that guy's got ideas. He's got other plans, and he's got now the freedom, the creative freedom, certainly the financial freedom to make whatever he wants. So, Jason, are you excited about what's up next for JJ?
I think it's a great move for him, and I totally understand it at the same time, because I was so surprised when he took Star Wars, because Star Trek was a huge undertaking and he had the world on his shoulders, and kind of no matter what he did, people were going to judge him about it. And then his follow-up to that movie was, oh, I'm just going to do another franchise where everybody's going to judge every single decision I make. So I kind of understand that J.J. Abrams is like, I want to do original things. But there is a medium where J.J. Abrams has been creating original ideas, and that's television. Mm-hmm. Lost, Fringe. He's an executive producer on Person of Interest. Mm-hmm. If he can bring some of that to movies, I think we're going to have a great slate or a great post-Star Wars career of J.J. Abrams. And don't forget, too, he's also a producer of the Cloverfield series, which I think so far has been two for two.
Well, the chat room, it's funny you said that, because Ken from Chicago says, so we want Cloverfield, Cloverland, and Cloverworld. He thinks those are all coming. Looking forward to that.
I'm down for all of those.
All right. What do you think, Tom?
I mean, you're looking for the Felicity movie.
Where's your reboot?
When is Felicity going to come up in this? I would go for an Alias movie. That'd be all right.
Yeah. No, I think I totally get what J.J. Abrams is saying. Is I don't want to get typecast as the reboot guy. I want to because of what you said, Jason. He did Lost. He did Alias. He did Felicity. Like, those are all original stories that he has told that are great stories, and he wants to get back to that. And I'll be very curious to see if he can do that. Even Cloverfield at this point, like, he may continue to make those, but it would be revisiting. And I think he's really craving creating something from scratch.
Yeah, I like this. He followed up to say, or somebody else says, don't forget Clover Paper and Clover 64. We've gone full Mario with the Cloverfield.
Clover Milk.
Clover Milk. The cows are coming for us.
Yeah, I don't want that.
Yeah. Speaking of somebody that J.J. Abrams has extended the universe from, George Lucas has chosen Los Angeles over San Francisco as the site for his Museum of Narrative Art. Lucas will finance the $1 billion museum to be located in Exposition Park near USC, where Lucas studied film. Along with Star Wars items like Darth Vader's mask, the museum will also show artwork chosen from the 40,000 items in Lucas's collection, including works by Norman Rockwell, Edgar Degas, Winslow Homer, Pierre-Auguste Renoir. He's got Renoirs, in his personal collection. So it will be a legit art museum as well as a museum of Lucas memorabilia.
That's intense. I didn't know he had... I mean, I knew this was going to be, you know, a lot of Star Wars stuff, and you'd see, I don't know, memorabilia from the Indiana Jones films or something. I had no idea it had that much extra stuff in there. Things that are, I mean, he's straight up making a museum, really, is what this turns out to be.
Basically needs to clean out his garage and he needs somewhere to store it.
Do you think, Tom, he chose LA because this would have been way too expensive in current day San Francisco, even though he's got all the money in the world and probably shouldn't matter?
It's so complex. He originally wanted to put it in Chicago.
Yeah.
And he couldn't get a deal together with Chicago, and he has been feuding with San Francisco for decades over multiple things, not just San Francisco, but also Marin County. So I feel like San Francisco was never really going to come through for him. And being near USC makes sense. You know, he is an underwriter of the film school there. He donated an endowment. It's where he went. And Exposition Park is a great area of museums. The California Science Academy is there. The Science Center is there with the space shuttle. So it seems like a logical place.
Well,
and correct me if I'm wrong, Tom, didn't some of the stuff of why this museum didn't go to Chicago was because George Lucas had an idea of the size of the museum and Chicago wasn't sure that they could accommodate that?
Yeah, I remember hearing something about that too. And I don't recall exactly, and I haven't dug in to find out exactly why it fell apart. But yeah, he pretty much wanted to get what he asked for where he went.
Well, 40,000 items, that's enormous. That is a huge collection of any measurement, isn't it?
The best part of the news of this for me is that I'm definitely excited. I'm going to go to this museum and see it. Yeah. And it just adds that Los Angeles has this really cool culture of museums. Like, we actually have a lot of really good museums here, and this just adds another one to the bunch. So, like,
totally.
Yay for the two people on this podcast that live in LA.
Yeah, well done, guys.
I'll be taking the blue line because we have trains here now, people.
Yep.
To Exposition Park.
That's awesome. Look at you with your public transportation. It's fantastic.
All right. Amazon has launched its own anime channel called Anime Strike, featuring collections of classic movies and TV shows, along with currently airing Japanese TV that they can get the rights to. Amazon Prime members can add the service to their existing subscriptions for $4.99 a month. So this is like what Amazon does with Stars and Cinemax and Showtime, where if you're an Amazon Prime member, you get the Amazon Prime Video as part of your membership, and then you can add on these other services. Amazon, kind of like when they sell their own brand of nuts or toothpaste, now has their own brand of add-on television service, in this case for anime.
I think this is super fascinating. Very quickly, Amazon Prime, generally speaking, has become one of my favorite places for original content. I could not be more happily enveloped in this season 2 of Man in the High Castle at the moment. And I love that show exists and that it exists there and that I can go get it whenever I want it, and I freaking love it. And a lot of their originals are like this for me. And they continually will have a movie or a TV show that for some reason is missing from Netflix. And they seem to be doing pretty well with this. But this is an interesting twist to their model to say, here's the main course, but if you want to add a little something here or there, here are some options. And I don't know that Netflix can do that. I feel like Netflix is in a place where they've painted themselves so deeply into the corner of, we are a one-purchase buffet. And everything we have in or out at any given time is what you get for your $10 a month. And there you go. I mean, something like that appeals to me. But I have to admit, it's kind of tempting. If something of an add-on comes out on Amazon Prime, you're like, well, I'm really into anime. I should get that. It makes perfect sense. $5 a month is probably nothing if you're really into classic anime. What do you think, Jason, about this idea?
I think it's a great move. I agree with you, Scott. Like, I'm totally into Amazon Prime. I actually prefer Amazon Prime to Netflix most of the times, especially since Netflix is doing this thing of 50% of its content has to be its original content. And more I'm noticing that, like, the stuff that I watch, that I rewatch, like Star Trek, Doctor Who, stuff like that, is being taken off of Netflix and it's arrived on Amazon Prime. And you're right, Amazon Prime has all these other services, you know, like Stars and Showtime. And I've noticed that they'll let you do it for Comic-Con HQ as well. Like, they'll let you do it for some of the internet services. And that is just, like, I think a brilliant business plan by Amazon, because you're just like, oh, I will go to Amazon for everything. I mean, I want to see an anime channel. I want to see, like, a Hanna-Barbera channel. I want to see, like, where's the DC superhero channel? Go crazy with this.
Yeah, they totally could. I guess it just depends on what you can define as a niche that people would pay an extra $5 a month for. Tom, do you know if, let's see, I'm going to open this up. They don't own Prime.com, do they? Because I have one complaint about Amazon Prime.
Oh, trying to find it. Yeah.
Yeah. So here's something I think they could really benefit
from.
Find
it on the app, on the device you want to watch it on. Going to it on the web is almost impossible.
Yeah. And terrible, I use it on the web quite a bit. Like, that's kind of where I get a lot of it. So it's frustrating as crap to have to go. I mean, basically what I do is I Google Amazon Prime Video and, or I'll bookmark that as a search or whatever. And boom, there it is. Or I'll bookmark the page. But it's not like it just feels like Amazon and I could just as easily be buying toilet paper or chili, which I have to do sometimes at the same time. I'm just saying. But the point is, though, wouldn't it be nice?
Add chili to shopping list.
Wouldn't it be nice? Wouldn't it be nice, though, if you could just go to Prime.com, which is currently a squatter site, and bam, there it is, or whatever the term. I don't care what the word is, but I just feel like
they could come up with any URL, right? As long as they made it familiar to us. Mm-hmm. But they want you to go to Amazon.com and search for The Man in the High Castle. and watch it that way, because that takes you through the store. If it feels like, you know, JCPenney making you walk through the clothing department to get to the down escalator because they're hoping maybe something will catch your eye. Yep.
Good point. Or if you watch this, you might also want to buy the DVD collection for this other thing or whatever. I totally get that. And that's probably not going to change, but it is my one chief frustration. Well, that and Apple TV never getting a deal where they can have the stupid app on there.
Yeah,
would you,
yeah.
Would you prefer it if you could just say, Alexa, play, you know, Boondock Saints? I don't know.
JasonNMinn@gmail.com for anyone whose echo just went off. let us know, and we'll compensate you generously.
Yeah, I would like Amazon to be able to train like Siri or the Google Assistant, where it can say only, it will only respond to one person, not to anybody on a podcast saying the name.
Yeah,
nice. I think this is a really interesting move for Amazon, where they're probably looking at anime that they were trying to add to the Amazon Prime Video service and realized rates are a little too expensive for the number of people we get to watch it. But what if we created a service? So an interesting move for them.
Daniel J. Newman in the chat room says the High Castle is code for the gift shop. So well done.
Into the gift shop. Yeah. Finally, Variety reports that Peter Dinklage is in talks for a role in Avengers Infinity War, the movie. The plan would be to shoot the movie and its sequel back to back starting this summer. So Dinklage would apparently appear in both movies. Anthony and Joe Russo are directing Avengers Infinity War has a release date of May 4th, 2018. Dinklage, if you recall, played Bolivar Trask in X-Men Days of Future Past. Avengers meets Benji is Avengies, and Peter Dinklage not rumored to be in that reboot.
You had me at Avengies. So I thought that movie was one movie now. Didn't that get consolidated? I didn't think it was a sequel.
They renamed the second movie, so it's no longer Avengers Infinity War Part 1. The first one's just going to be Avengers Infinity War, and then the second one, they haven't revealed the title yet. I'm predicting it's going to be called New Avengers.
Ah, interesting. Or Avengies, New Avengies.
New Avengies.
I accidentally slipped and announced the title of the second movie. Sorry about that.
Or maybe you announce some, I don't know, they're going to make a bunch of action figures. It'll be little cutesy ones with big heads and big eyes, and they'll call them Avengies. Yeah. Yeah, I like it.
The Avengie-meebos.
Perfect. I'm actually pretty stoked about where the Avengers go next, mainly because the Russo brothers are in charge. I've said this from the beginning. They're my favorite of the Marvel movies are the ones they've helmed. I've loved both those movies, Winter Soldier and Civil War. And I feel like if anybody can properly take the big ensemble superhero cast into the next couple of films, it's those guys. So I'm pretty stoked either way. And hey, Peter Dinklage, who's the whole point here, that guy's great. Bring him on. Let him do his thing. And he's going to be that character as far as we know, right? He's not going to be somebody else. I hope not.
Yeah. Oh, no, I don't think he's going to be Bolivar Trask. Is that what you're saying?
I don't know. Is he? He can't be, because Bolivar Trask is from
the X-Men character.
Yeah, like he's an X-Men character. Yeah, they can't swap him over.
So I have a strong guess. Well, I have a strong hope that he's the Watcher. Mm. And if he's the Watcher, it will lie into some of these rumors that I have been hearing over and over and over again, that Fox and Marvel have made the Fantastic Four deal, and they're going to announce it at Comic-Con this year. So they have a Fantastic Four deal like they do with Spidey. And the Watcher being in this movie is like the break of that, like, because the Watcher is a Fantastic Four character. I hope anyway. And I've heard a lot of rumors leaning towards that. So I hope he's the Watcher.
What if he's...
I've decided I want that too. Like that, that totally is compelling.
What if he ends up being... I mean, I'm not... This isn't about his height, okay, everybody? But what if he's like MODOK? Got a great big face, you know?
He'd be a great MODOK. Why not?
I'm really excited about the future where one of the MCU movies finally has MODOK in it. We'll see. All right. Well, hey, that's the end of the stories. Hey, everyone. That's the end of our news. Hope you enjoyed those. And I know you did. And the reason you did partly is because we have really smart listeners who curate them for us. And they do that on our Reddit page. Tom, you want to give some of these guys credit for their fine work today?
Oh, dude, Captain Kipper hitting it out of the park 3 for 3 this week. Thank you for submitting those, Captain Kipper. Also, Hobbit from PA and Gatekeeper, who spells it the way you should spell it, G-8-K-P-R. Those people and lots of other folks submitting stuff at currentgeek.reddit.com. Go and join them.
That's right.
Show better.
So, Jason, one of the things we like to do for our guests in the midway point here is give them a chance to talk about some of the projects they're involved in. We're changing podcasting because usually people save this for the very end, but no, we like to stick it right in the middle.
Force people to listen to it.
Exactly. What what kind of cool stuff is Jason Inman up to these days? Any cool projects you can tell people about?
Well, of course, every week we always have the Geek History Lesson podcast. Me and Ashley, we break down a character in about an hour from pop culture. We had the lovely Scott Johnson, that guy on there very recently. It was a really cool episode. So that's every week. But the big thing that we got is this Wednesday, January 18th at 8 a.m., Ashley and I are launching a Kickstarter for our first comic book miniseries. It's called Jupiter Jet, and it's about a 16-year-old girl with a jetpack stealing from the mob and giving to the poor of her neighborhood. It's set in 1935. It's mixed with a little bit of sci-fi, and it's an all-ages book that will be eventually published by Action Lab Comics. And we're doing the Kickstarter to raise the funds for the artists and the letterer, all that kind of stuff like that, because if you don't know, comic books are expensive if you want them to look good. So you want good artists on there. So that's a thing. But yeah, this Wednesday, JupiterJetComic.com is the easiest place to go find that. And we have lots of cool stuff because my day job, I get to hang out with all kinds of cool comic book people. So I basically ask them all for favors. And if you read the Wonder Woman comic book right now, it's drawn by a lovely artist named Nicholas Scott. And she did a print for us for the campaign that you can get there of Jupiter Jet. We also have Tim Seeley, the writer of Nightwing. He's got a print for us. So we have all kinds of cool stuff, including script reviews from like people that actually work in comic books. And please go over there and check it out, because if you know anything about me, it's my dream to make a comic book. And this is my first sort of ongoing comic book series. And JupiterJetComic.com on Wednesday, January 18th is where you can find that.
That's amazing. I'm looking at
that. Sounds so good.
Yeah.
Like it's a little Robin Hood, Godfather, Kick-Ass, and Atomic Robo all rolled into one. It sounds
Yeah. There are ray guns in this.
That's so fantastic.
Sci-fi flavor.
Yeah. I'm loving the art. It's got a very, it's got a totally cool retro thing. My daughter's going to love this.
How does it work? How do you guys break it down? Do you both work on the story together? Who does the art? How does that all shake out?
We talk about like what we want to hit on in each issue. And Ashley always does the first draft because she's better at words than me. And then I come back in and I'm more of the dialogue guy. And I'm also more of the like, you did too many things in that panel. You can't. No. And so then we go back there and we send it off to our lovely artist, Ben Matsuya, who, fun fact, was a fan of mine, who did a fan artwork of me about a year ago.
Oh, fantastic.
And I loved it. And I was like, do you draw comic books? And so over the past year, we've been sort of like passing images and scripts back and forth, developing Jupiter Jet with him. So it just goes to show you people out there, if there's somebody out there you really want to work with, send them a nice and not weird message and they may respond.
I'm jealous. You're working with Colin Bunn on script review. He did my favorite comic series of all time, which is the Six Gun series. And I am.
Colin is a really cool dude. And also we have more script reviews and more prints from other people that I don't want to announce yet that are going to like come into the campaign later on. So yeah, like if you've ever been curious about comic books or anything like that, like those script reviews, I know for me, like for Cullen Bunn, the writer of Six Gun, I would pay our perk to get that script. To get him to look at your script and give you notes on it is worth its weight in gold.
No, that's huge. That's awesome. Loving that. All right. Very cool, man. And again, people, if you go to, JupiterJetComic.com is where I went. It took me straight to the Kickstarter. You'll get to see
it. Yeah, it's not live yet, but it will be.
Yeah. Looking like we're real close since art is really awesome already. And this is just the beginning. So do check it out. All right. Well, you know where that leads us, Tom. That leads us right to this point of the show where we like to tell the fine people at home that, hey, you can help support this show. How do you do it? Well, you're all, some of you anyway, are out there going, you know, I really want to try one of these monthly boxes that have like stuff in them. But sometimes it's just a t-shirt or a thing or a whatever, and they're okay, but they're not always full of things you want. So what we've done is we've made our own, and we've made it all for Current Geek. And you can get it at frogpants.cratejoy.com. What's in there? Original art from me, writings and books and stuff from Tom, stuff our guests provide, special things we don't even know about yet because our fulfillment guy will surprise us even with something cool like USB chargers and branded shot glasses and super cool things like that. So it's a great way to support the show and get cool stuff with a bit of a personal touch, I believe, because this stuff's coming straight from us. So go check it out, frogpants.cratejoy.com, and consider helping us out on the show.
All right. I was just talking to Dark Redeemer in our chat room.
Reward.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, Jason. Dark Redeemer in our chat room was saying earlier today that he got his first box, and he's like, it feels like there's 3 months worth of stuff in here.
There kind of is, yeah.
Was that a complaint from him? He was like, you gave me too much.
Yeah, yes, stop it.
Too much stuff. Well, we're happy to give you too much stuff. More stuff on the way. Again, it's frogpants.cratejoy.com. It's time for the pop quiz.
America scores and wins.
All right. That music could only mean one thing. Time for the pop quiz. That's where we take an area of expertise for Jason and we ask him questions in that area. He answers them right or wrong. When they're right, that's the wrong thing. Hold on. That didn't work right. Okay, when they're right, you'll hear this. When they're wrong, you'll hear this. And it's all very exciting the entire way through. I'm going to quickly bring up your questions because they got lost somehow. There we go. All right. Your topic this week is Marvel Universe Trivia.
Okay, let's go.
We were going to do DC.
I work for the competition, but let's go.
Ashley's was going to be DC for that reason.
It's funny.
And so we're sticking you with that. I think you're gonna like this. So let me just pull that up over there. Okay, here we go. Let's start with your first question. Oh, and Tom will keep score this whole time. It's all going to be totally fair, of course, and you'll be 100% compensated for your time. Just kidding. None of that's true. Here we go. Question number one.
Rice-a-roni.
Yeah, you do get that. Everyone gets Rice-a-roni on their way out. Can Wolverine's claws cut through Captain America's shield?
No.
Oh, you say no, do you? Well, let's find out. Is that right? Oh, very well done. That is correct, actually. You can't do that. How about this one? Who is the mother of Thor?
Oh, man. I don't remember it from the comic books, but I do remember it from Norse mythology. Is it Freya?
You are... Well, that's what I thought, but he wrote Frigga. I think he meant Freya.
Oh.
Yeah, it's pronounced Freya. That's like a Norse spelling.
But it's spelled Frigga?
I mean, yeah.
Okay.
Like, you'll see it spelled with a Y, too, because we English speakers don't want to make G's into Y's.
Right. Because we think that's dumb and sounds weird. We're giving you that one. Congratulations. Right. Well done. What is the name? You know what? I might do her questions just for fun.
I think we should.
Sure, we're going to, because we only have 5 each. So this is easy. All right. And that'll all be bonus stuff. Here's the next one. What is the name of the amulet that Doctor Strange wears around his neck and chest?
That is the Eye of Agamotto.
Jeez. Look at this, Tom.
I'm a nerd. I like both sides. I got a Daredevil print behind me right here.
Killing it, dude. Killing it. Very impressive. All right. Next up. What is the alter ego of She-Hulk?
Jennifer... Walters?
You are so close. It is Jennifer Walters. Just kidding. Here you go. There you got a ding for that one. I read that wrong. That is correct. I read it. My eyes skipped to the line ahead, and it looked like it said Jennifer Amagato. So there's that.
Jennifer Amagato.
Jennifer Walters is correct. Final question in this category. Who is the name of the host of Carnage, of the Carnage symbiote?
I know he is a hillbilly guy.
Yeah.
So he has like a hillbilly name. It's Cletus. I'm going to say Cassady, but it might be Cassidy.
Cassidy or Cassady? You are correct. It is Cletus, one of those two. I don't know which one for sure. Well done. All right. Now.
What's the answer, Scott?
It's Cletus Cassady. Okay. Or if it's Cassidy, it could be that. Kasady is the correct spelling there.
It's Freya. Got it.
Yeah, Freya. Yeah. Fraga. Got it.
It's Frigga.
All right. Here are your wife's questions. All right. Sure. So let's see how you do here. Ashley's questions. All right. DC Universe Trivia. In Hush, great book. Jim Lee, amazing. Who takes over LexCorp after Lex Luthor becomes president of the United States of America?
That is an easy question. It is Talia al Ghul.
You are correct. Well done.
Fun fact, we have a Talia al Ghul Geek History lesson coming up.
Oh, very nice. That's cool. Yeah, she was.
She ran a great race.
Oh my gosh,
That was the ultimate dad joke I've ever heard. That was amazing, Tom.
That was a friggin' good joke.
That was great. in what year did DC publish The Death of Superman?
Ooh. 92?
You would be correct. Well done.
All right. I'm guessing I'm going 10 for 10.
I think you might be. Who was the artist on DC's Kingdom Come miniseries? That's too easy.
Alex Ross.
Yes, he's the man. That's such a great book. Who was the first Green Lantern?
Ooh, that might be a little bit of a trick question, but I'm going to say Alan Scott.
You are correct. Okay. What made it tricky? I'm curious.
Well, because he's not technically like one of the Green Lantern Corps, so that might have been a little bit of a trick question. Like, he just was a guy that was like, oh, I'm just going to call myself Green Lantern. So I didn't know.
All right. That makes sense. Well done.
I'm a super nerd.
Yeah, I like it. All right. Next and final question. Where is Wonder Woman from?
I'm going to give you both names. It is Themyscira or Paradise Island.
Nailed it. Tom, I don't know what to do with this. He's too good.
10 out of 10.
Yeah, he got 10 out of 10. Like, I don't know the last time first of all, there's a couple of firsts here. No one's ever done two tests in a row. All right, you have now. And no one's ever gotten 100% 10 out of 10 on two tests.
Yeah.
Concurrently
or
otherwise.
I'll throw out the challenge to you. I will come back anytime you want and go deep with the comic book questions, deep hardcore.
Yeah.
And let's see how I do. I bet you.
And
I
now
get a 90,
to our,
a 90%
we turn to our dark horse questions next. those. All right. Concrete. Here's our image questions.
Yeah. Throw them
our Golden Key comics question.
Yeah. Throw them an IDW question or something. Transformers 100. Well done. You did very well. And
was that entertaining at all since I just blew?
Oh, totally.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. No, you killed it. Listen, we don't usually we got people going, I don't know. And then that's entertaining, I guess, in its own right. But I'm impressed with your performance. Well done. All right. Time to for some cast.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
Part of the show where we predict the future. Sometimes it's about technology or pop culture or whatever. This used to be kind of based on a show Tom and I did called Forecast. Now we do it right here. And I threw this one in. I was thinking the other day, we're always talking about different ways of working with computers. And right now, one of the big pushes anyway is voice activation and voice recognition. And that's fine. There's a lot of sort of motion tracking ideas that are sort of in the works, and you know how we'll interact with our interfaces and our computers in the future is a fascinating thing. I got to thinking, as we get better and better at eye tracking technology with various products that would take advantage of that, maybe, just maybe, the way that we'll turn on our Echoes or turn on our car, you know, start our car on a cold winter day, is maybe just looking at it. And by that, I don't mean just anywhere. Maybe there has to be a sensor. Or maybe there's a
watch very, where you look.
Yeah, everywhere you look at your car.
Don't turn on the car, Jimmy.
But this idea of being able to look at it and hold your gaze for maybe 3 seconds, kind of like pressing and holding on a touchscreen, but you're doing it with your eyes, is enough for the device to go, good morning, Mr. Johnson. How would you like your coffee this morning? You know, whatever. I feel like that's a really interesting idea. Now, the problem is it would have to get really, really good at not only recognizing eye movement and then interpreting it, but also recognizing you for who you are versus somebody else. So your kid can't walk up to, the lawnmower, stare at it, and then have it take off and run them over or something. I got a little dark there. I didn't mean to go there, but you know what I mean? Like, you don't want to have
just, man.
You don't want anybody's eyes to activate this thing. So I'm curious, Tom, as my favorite tech cohort, how likely is it that I'm anywhere near the ballpark on this?
Yeah, I think it's a fascinating idea. And there's the million objections that we've already started to dig through of like, accidental gaze. How do you tell that that's really what you wanted to do and all of that? Mm-hmm. But there's ways around that. And I like your idea of the long gaze. Mm-hmm. In fact, that could work in with some machine learning that is being done to track people's gazes to see where they pay attention when they're looking at various things like web pages or newspapers or whatever, to say, they're focusing on that. If you could take that research and apply it to, I know when he's just glancing at the car versus, because of context and machine learning, I can tell he's looking at the car for it to start.
Right.
So it wouldn't even be as simple as 3 seconds. It would be sort of a contextual thing where it would just know. The other thing is we might learn particular gestures with our eyes. Like you widen your eyes a little bit or you narrow them a little bit in a certain way to say, oh, well, I actually want an action to happen now. I think a combination of all that stuff could correct for errors so you don't accidentally start the lawnmower and vice versa, make it easy to not have to think about it and get stuff done.
Well, if I did like a motion of like, get out of here like this, like sort of, that's more head motion, but like the sort of eyes flick that way, like turning things off. Maybe that works for that. I don't know.
I've often wanted eye tracks, very simple eye tracking in my laptop to know which window I'm looking at. Because have you ever done the thing where you do a keyboard shortcut and you happen to still be clicked on the text pad, but you're looking at the browser and then, you know, and you're like, I should have known that I was looking at the browser.
What's going on here? Come on.
Yeah, totally. Like last night, this is so funny you brought that up. It reminded me of something. Last night I'm watching Man in the High Castle, trying to find that high castle and where that man is, right?
Yeah, it's the good show.
And turns out it has something to do with news radio. It's a tiny bit of a spoiler. But anyway, so I'm watching it, and Kim comes in the room. She says, hey, I need to go something with the car. There's snow. We got to move snow. And I look at her, and I realize, oh, shoot, I got to, like, fumble around and pause. And where's the I forget where Amazon's pause is. Is it in the middle or is it down in the corner? And then I'm like, pull an earbud out and say what? And I thought, wouldn't it be cool if it knew when I looked away and just had an immediate lag-free stop and start sort of thing happening. So I could just go, what? And as soon as I looked away, it would stop where it was. And as soon as I looked back, it would kick on again. Like even just some simple little entertainment-y thing like that would be cool.
Let me ask you a question. Do you think that the looking away technology would be interrupted a lot just because of people looking at their phones?
Yes. And that maybe is a way. I mean, one would assume that this would all be some sort of slider of sensitivity or whether you wanted it on or not, and who knows. But I feel like that would be something you'd want to be able to say maybe at the top. I want to be able to two-screen this because I like looking at my phone and checking out IMDb or whatever. It's funny because Amazon also, part of the Prime player, is that when you do pause, when you tap the screen to pause it, you get pictures of everybody from IMDb as to who's in the scene, what their name is, what are their other pro. I love that. It's like one of my favorite things ever. And that's something I normally would be double screening for. So the fact that they baked it right in is really cool. But I don't know. Also, this is only a solitary experience, Jason. Like, what if we had 10 people in a room trying to watch Star Wars and one of them looks away? Does it turn it off?
Then it would stop every time.
Right.
You'd never get through a movie.
Right. There's a lot of questions about my dumb idea, but how would you want this implemented if you could choose?
Ooh, I don't know. That's a tough question. I don't know if the area that I think would be implemented is an area that I never want to see is, I actually think this technology would be more used like we see it in Minority Report. Mm. Like it would not, like I just went to Vegas recently and it would not surprise me that within like 20 years, you're walking through those shops in Vegas with the fake skies and those retina scanners are just catching the like Minority Report and telling you ads at every second.
Yeah. Maybe it's so the other direction, not us telling the thing what to do. It's the thing seeing us and we're like, since we're in the room and it recognizes who we are based on our retinal scan or whatever, it starts feeding us stuff. That's an interesting.
Yeah, your eyes linger on the restaurant's display of a burger, and suddenly it's like, hey, the burgers are 50% off. You could be eating that burger right now, Scott.
Yeah, like, or it'd be like, did you enjoy that giant chili burger you had yesterday?
Yeah.
Here's some Tums.
Yeah, no kidding. Tums, Pepto, and about four other things I'd need. I don't know. Like, maybe I don't like that as much, you know? Maybe I don't want new ways for the world to advertise for me, because my original thinking here was, oh, this would give me more control, or this would give me less distraction, or
whatever. Like any technology, it'll probably be both, right? It'll give you more control, but it'll also do these other things that we'll have to battle with a little bit.
Good point. So watch for it. Coming soon, everybody. Retinal eye movement burger ordering. Coming soon. All right. We got a quick email we're going to rip through here from Cyberless. Why cyber for more when you can cyber for less? Hi, guys. Cyberless here. And I guess cyberless maybe is how you say it. And I have a question. Do you think we will always look back on TV as it is now and call it the golden age? Or do you think it just gets better and better from here? And I would maybe add to that, maybe it gets worse from here. But it's an interesting question. Tom, do you think we're at the truly the golden age, or are we headed toward better or worse, or does it not matter?
What I think Cyberless is saying is, are we going to look back at this as the golden age because things will get worse? Mm. Right. And we'll say, remember when we had Daredevil and Westworld and Game of Thrones. That was the golden age of television. They don't make them like that anymore. Mm. Or is it going to maintain or increase that quality? And when I looked at this email, my reaction was, I've been feeling like television shows are becoming like books. If people don't realize, books used to be thought to be trivial, mm-hmm. wastes of time, fiction books anyway, that no one should bother with. They were serialized through magazines, not published all at once. You'd get the DVD compilation of Dickens later after he finished being serialized in the magazine as a book, but that was not the way it was initially published. And then eventually fiction became really good and people realized Dickens was really good and Jane Eyre and all of that stuff became, we can just put out books. We can put out all the episodes at once, if you will. Mm-hmm. And I feel like there's a lot of parallels there with what's going on with television, where we're finally getting people who say, hey, you know, we're not just satisfying a monthly publishing or a weekly publishing schedule like TV did in the 70s. We can create stories of varying lengths. We can put them out all at once. And so I don't think you look back at the 1800s and say, we don't make them like that anymore. Books are crap now. But we do kind of romanticize that as the classics, right? As mm-hmm. the golden age. And I think that may be what we look back at this time is like, those are the classics of television. These were the ones that paved the way for the television industry that we have now.
So it's like the silver age of comics, Jason. I remember when Silver Surfer first showed up, I thought of Silver, so I said Silver Surfer. But you know what I mean. Like, we look back at these eras not as the end-all, be-all, and it's all been crap since then. But it's okay to look at the 80s and say, the time where we got meaningful teenage stories that really mm-hmm. meant something to you in high school because I don't know, Breakfast Club really knew how to get to you or whatever. And that really opened the door for many stories like it. And now you can name a million of them that came after. But boy, what a high point. Is that, do you agree with that? That's all this will ever be, is a high point?
I do agree. I do think they'll get better and better because, yeah, that was my sort of problem with a little bit of the question is like, where do you start or end this golden age? Because I don't think it ever really started and I don't think it ever really stopped because, yeah, you brought up great examples. We have Cheers. You go to the 90s, it's like sitcoms like Friends and Seinfeld. You get to 2000s and then we start hitting these cable dramas like Breaking Bad and Battlestar Galactica. And then we get to now, and it's like the drama of like the streaming services, mm-hmm. Which I would even include HBO in that, even though, because it's now become HBO Go and Netflix and Daredevil and stuff like that. I think they'll go bolder. I think they'll get bigger because now with so much content, everybody will be trying to do the new idea or the new thing that we've never seen to differentiate themselves from everybody else. But I also think that there will be a period, because I think it always happens, that right now, everybody would agree that movies are not the greatest. Like, if you look at the blockbuster movies we had this year, you'd probably be like, okay, yeah, there was some Arrival, you know, that would be like the one you'd name probably. But I think that we could see this flip in maybe 10 years. Whenever I think maybe ever the superhero genre is finally like, people are like, we've had enough superhero movies. We have like 9,000 of these things. It might flip back to where movies become the storytelling kings because movie studios look at TV and they're like, look at all the stuff that they did in TV. Let's get those guys to make our movies. And then you might see a little dip. But yeah, I kind of agree with you, Scott. It's kind of like comic books. Like, it'll just keep going on and we'll just look back at the previous period and be like, well, that just did things differently than now.
Yeah, it feels like the economics of it will be more of a factor than anything because, you know, mm-hmm. What the box office does, what it supports seems to be dependent on what people are willing to go out and see movies for. And mm-hmm. it used to be their only outlet for getting video entertainment. That's all very much changed. And TV is now a thing you can consume in lots of different ways at lots of different times and pay for in lots of different ways. So it's affording lots of different creative ways of making content. So we're seeing a bit of a jump in all of that stuff, but that stuff can ebb and flow. And like you said, I really agree with this. It's a very granular change. It isn't like we went from, you know, Happy Days straight to Breaking Bad. We went from, you know,
although I do want to see that crossover episode.
Wow.
Really jumped the black and white shark there.
Bond shows up at Albuquerque.
But, oh my gosh, that's
would
actually not bad.
Would the Fonz hang out with Jesse? I say no.
It's not bad. The Fonz and Jesse hanging out? To think on that one for a while. But the idea of like, you know, when TV happened at first, it was a reflection of what radio already was. It just added a visual component and it was like an extension of vaudeville in a way. And all that same sort of production value carried over. And then it would start to change and evolve. And by the time you got to the 60s, 70s, and 80s, you know, TV was like where you went to die if you weren't making it in films. And now it's the other way around. You go and do TV shows because there's an amazing project, even if you're a big, huge filmmaker. I just noticed Tom Hardy's new show, Taboo, premiered on FX. I haven't seen it yet. I want to. But it reminds me that, yeah, we're now at a place where even at the height of your film career, where you're getting Oscar nominations and you're being asked to be in every project, you are also doing television series that you're starring in, helping produce, and working with Ridley Scott on. Like, it's a different time for sure.
I know. Look, think about Anthony Hopkins starring in Westworld.
Yeah.
That's a big deal.
And, alongside Ed Harris.
Yeah. Alongside Ed Harris. Yeah. Like, movies, big movie stars. And it's interesting because we're less than 20 years removed from when I can remember in 99, 2000-ish, when Keith Sutherland took 24 and when Martin Sheen took West Wing and people being like, is this a right move for their career?
Right. Yeah. Right, right.
Well, I think the lines are blurring where before it was two separate industries. There were movies and they were 90 minutes to 3 hours at the max. And that was a story, and that was a certain amount of money that you got in that industry. And then there was broadcast with your four broadcast networks, and they were half hour or they were hour and they were weekly, and there was a certain amount of money that you would get for that, and that was it. These days you're getting huge budgets for out of Netflix and Amazon and others for television series that don't have to be 26 episodes or 22 episodes. They can be varying lengths. Each episode can be varying lengths. You've got movies saying, you know what, we're going to shoot all the Hobbit movies at once. We're going to shoot two Avengers movies back to back all at once. And Twin Peaks coming to Showtime, David Lynch's big deal was, I want to shoot it as one long story, one big 18-hour movie, and then we'll go back and cut it up into episodes. And in fact, I'm not even sure he knew it was an 18-hour movie. He was just like, I'm going to shoot one long movie, and then we'll figure out how to make it into episodes. So
it was probably like an hour movie for him.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So whether you're a movie actor or a TV actor, the lines are going away. You're an actor, and there are lots of different ways to tell stories, and there's different methods of distributing them now.
Yeah, it's a fascinating time. I'm really curious about what all this looks like in 10 years. But I do think we'll look back fondly on the aughts and the teens. At some point and say, yeah, remember those shows? Those were great. And it'll probably be about the time they're reviving them all.
Yeah.
And we have to make a decision now. At least I feel like, I'll speak for me. I'm making a decision right now. I will not be crabby about this when I'm in my 70s and they're saying we're going to reboot
the
show.
Wow, you're going to age a lot. in 10 years.
I'm going to nicely done. I'm going to say right now that I'm going to be okay with it. And I don't want to be that guy who was 25 when he saw Ghostbusters and now he's cranky because there's a new Ghostbusters.
You can't remake Alias.
Yeah, I'm fine with it. In fact, I'm ready for Alias remake right now. I'd be okay with it right now.
Speaking I'd be down Alias, for it.
Yeah, it'd be all right. Big thanks for the email, Cyberless. That's an awesome email. We love your emails here on the show. You can leave those at currentgeek@gmail.com. If you're so inclined, you can leave us a voicemail at 801-471-0462. And that going to do it for the show. Jason, before we go, first of all, huge thanks for joining us. You were awesome tonight.
Thank you guys for letting me join the show, crash the show, invade the show, because I'm a fan of you guys. So this is cool. This is cool that I've crossed the bar.
That's right.
Now I'm a guest.
You've seen how the lousy sausage is made.
Yes, I have.
tell us one more time where people can go to find more of you and yours.
You can always find me on Twitter at Jawin, J-A-W-I-I-N, YouTube channel with the same name. And then Geek History Lesson is the podcast on iTunes every single week. And then if you want to help us make a comic book, JupiterJetComic.com.
Nice. Crowdfunding at its finest. Tom Merritt, mm-hmm. Thomas, as his mother might say. What? Anything you want to mention this week before we go?
I mean, she might say that. She doesn't usually. Thomas Andrew Merritt, maybe if I was really in trouble or something.
Yeah.
But Yeah, I just want to remind people that my book Pilot X is coming out March 14th. So you can get the pre-orders right now at inkshares.com. I think it's starting to show up for pre-orders on places like Barnes & Noble and stuff as well. I was very happy that Gary Whitta, the screenwriter for Rogue One, A Star Wars Story, and The Book of Eli, took a look at it and said it is a time-bending space adventure that had me hooked from the start.
Wow.
So thank you, Gary. And then maybe if you've been on the fence about buying it, you can go check it out now. Pilot X, inkshares.com or tommerrittbooks.com.
That came really fast, dude. March came quick for this.
I know, right?
But yeah, that's super awesome, though. So totally stoked for you. Go check that out, you guys. Okay, what else? I think we pretty much have it all covered here. I covered everything. Currentgeek.com is our website. If I haven't mentioned that, that's an important thing. And if you want to be a big part of us, you can go there. Also, don't forget those loot crates things. You can get us at frogpants.cratejoy.com. And for everything else, check us out on the internet at Current Geek on Twitter. It's going to do it for us, for me, for Tom, and our guest. We'll see you next time.
Hi, and welcome back to Legal Geek. As the calendar turns from 2016 to 2017, now's a good time to wish everybody a Happy New Year, and thank you for all the segment suggestions. And it's also a good time for us to do a fun segment looking back at the top 10 most ridiculous lawsuits of 2016. But before we get to that, a quick bit of news. In the Star Trek Axanar copyright lawsuit that has been percolating and covered on this segment. This week, the judge in that case ruled that Axanar Productions cannot use fair use as a defense to copyright infringement. That means Axanar will have to prove to a jury that their actions do not constitute copyright infringement in fact, which will be a very difficult case for them to make, and this likely means the case will go to a settlement favorable to Paramount and CBS. In other words, without fair use, there's not much chance of victory. Now let's look at some of these crazy cases from the year that was 2016. A mom and her son suing over an SAT test typo that gave students an extra 5 minutes to complete a section. That's right, they actually sued because students got too much time to take the test. No! Another case that makes the list is a 6-year-long litigation that has turned into a $30,000 lawsuit over an original $40 sale of a used printer. The lawsuit claims that the printer was broken. Yes, that's right, folks. You can buy something on Craigslist and it might be broken. No! And my favorite, even though it doesn't come in at number one on the Department of Commerce's list, is the walking while texting lawsuit. A Georgia woman walked into a ladder while texting on her cell phone and it caused the phone to hit her forehead. She won $161,000 in damages. No! If you want to check out the entire list, check out the Institute for Legal Reform at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce website, and they will show you some of the most ridiculous lawsuits every single year. And here's to 2017, when Legal Geek will go on, and I will see all of you at Nerdtacular one last time at Snowbird. Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and segment suggestions to me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Yes, get more at frogpants.com.